Today's scripture comes from the book of Acts in the New Testament portion of the Bible, found on pages 119 and 122 of your pew Bible. Acts of the Apostles, which is the proper name of the book, is part of a two-volume set written by somebody, we don't know who. It's also the same individual authored the third gospel, which we identify as that of Luke, so Luke did them both. I'm okay with that. The Acts of the Apostle is really a history of the early church, and its theme is how Christianity spread from Jerusalem in its beginnings to all of the world, and the world was Rome back then, so when it gets to Rome, it quits. It follows Peter for a while, and then he disappears. We don't know what happens to him. And then it follows Peter or Paul for quite a while. He gets to Rome, and we lose track of him. Clearly, the theme overrides these two individuals in whatever we're doing. The first reading is the early church, and it's all sweetness and light. It was just a wonderful time. The second reading is things have come apart a little bit, and it's not near, there's going to be some death, just to give you a spoiler alert here. A unified congregation, I think, is what Chris is going to tell us, can have lots of things in it. It can be divided over diversity. It can be unified. There's nothing new in the world. Or is it just an alternating series? That's what we're here. So, the first part is Acts chapter 2, verses 43 to 47. This is the sweetness and light portion. A sense of awe came over everyone. God performed many wonders and signs through the apostles. All the believers were united and shared everything. They would sell pieces of property and possessions and distribute the proceeds to everyone who needed them. Every day they met together in the temple and ate in their homes. They shared food with gladness and simplicity. They praised God and demonstrated God's goodness to everyone. The Lord added daily to the common community those who were being saved. And the second part is from the fifth chapter, verses 7 and 8. Things have not gone so well, and some people are not doing some things. We pick it up just after a fellow who had sold some property and held back some of the money has died, and they've carried him away to be buried. And about 3 hours later, his wife entered, but she didn't know what had happened to her husband, he who died. Peter asked her, "Tell us, did you and your husband receive this price for the field?" She responded, "Yes, that's the amount." And then it goes on and she dies too. So that's the word of God. Thanks be to God.
Thank you, Alan. I hope he's gotten you real curious about what in the world I'm going to do. I'm thinking about being in the eighth grade, remembering eighth grade. Anybody here remember eighth grade? Maybe some of you are in eighth grade or anticipating eighth grade. I think it's a great chapter of life. For many of us, it's about when we really start asking spiritual questions. Here at Central, we make a big deal of eighth graders, and we have a whole year of confirmation retreats so a young person can claim their own faith and not just inherit a faith from their parents. It's the age where a Jewish youngster might have a bar mitzvah or a bar mitzvah. We might think of it as the age of reason or age of accountability. Probably comes a little sooner for girls, a little later for boys, but it's an important rite of passage, being about in the eighth grade. I'm remembering being in the eighth grade when my family would go to church together. No small effort for my parents to wrestle all five of us boys with, I'm sure, a little bit of hitting each other in the arm and talk and complaining, but we made it. Generally a little late, but we would make it to church. And there would always be a seat for me in the eighth grade boys' Sunday school class led by Mr. Tom Schumpert, who was the coach at our high school. I could tell Mr. Schumpert liked us guys. It was just guy time, just a bunch of boys and this coach. It was very cool. He'd ask us a lot of questions about things we'd maybe heard in the news. He'd talk about what the church stands for, and he'd talk about certain Bible verses. He'd ask us a lot of questions about what we wanted to do with our lives. I have to say, all these years later, I can't remember much of what Mr. Schumpert taught us in eighth grade Sunday school with the boys, except for one day. It was one day where the lesson was on what is the church and why is there a church in the world? And remember, Mr. Shumpert, as best I can remember the gist, said, "Boys, do you think there's hypocrites in the church?" You bet there are. And that's exactly where they need to be, all of us, because we're all hypocrites. What is a hypocrite, boys, except somebody who knows they ought to be doing better than they are? Yeah, church is the right place for all of us hypocrites, because this is where we come to learn how to be better people. That's about the gist of the lesson Mr. Shumpert taught us, at least what I can remember. I've got to tell you, though, here some 45 years later, I am remembering that class. And I remember, in some ways, it was the first time it ever occurred to me as a young person that I needed the church in order to be a better me. We're talking in our Creed series today about this line that identifies the power and nature of the church to be a redemptive body in the world that Christ followers very much need. The Creed says the church is a bedrock value. Now, many are staying away from the church these days. Have you noticed? Maybe some of your own children or grandchildren, maybe your own self have kind of moved in and out, not sure that the church is really something you vitally need. I notice it and I read a fair amount of this bright, rising generation, some call millennials, you know, like 18 to 35, maybe to 40 years old. Especially that group of demographic is staying away from the church. One reason is when interviews show they feel the church has been a negative, a judgmental influence in culture that hasn't helped people put their lives together. And it's interesting that these same very bright young people often have a lot of admiration for Jesus himself, but not so much admiration for his people known as the church. And that ancient creed that we call the Apostles' Creed that we're Pastor Dale and I are teasing apart with you over these weeks, there is a line in it that says, "I believe in the Holy Catholic Church." Now, what does that mean? Well, to get to the core, the subject of the term, the word church itself, we got to peel back a couple of adjectives first. Holy, Catholic. First, I would want to say about that word holy. Now, it's not to mean that the church is supposed to be filled with a lot of pretty righteous people who have figured out all the moral dilemmas in life and are just very cool and kind of non-anxious and have it figured out and their spiritual life is all together. Except for maybe Dale. But for the rest of us, maybe not so much. I'm teasing. Holy, if you look at the etymology of what the word means, it literally means to be set apart for God's ways. I like to think that this piece of furniture that's in the middle of our sanctuary, the Lord's table, we don't set up a TV on it, we don't eat dinner on it in a casual way. We see it as something very special. It's where vows are spoken. It's where we break bread for Holy Communion and the sacraments are there. It's a holy piece of furniture. It's been set apart for something important. That's kind of what the church is about. It's an organization set apart for transcendent, powerful things that change the world in the name of God's love. So there's that second word, the Holy Catholic Church. What does that mean? I still have people coming up to me fairly regularly saying, "Why does that creed say that we're a bunch of Catholics here?" Well, Catholic, when it's a little c, is an adjective. It's not a brand. In its etymology, it literally means throughout or everywhere. So back in the early church, you know, you'd have a church in Jerusalem and Ephesus and Philippi and all. And while they were different from each other, that sometimes they spoke different dialects. Maybe they have a different hue, different ethnicity. Maybe not all their daddies were from the same place, but they had in common the gospel. And they had a unity that made them Catholic with a little c. Again, the word simply means throughout. So all throughout Judea and Israel, the church existed. So you are a part of the Catholic Church, which is spread throughout the globe in every country in a wonderful way with great diversity. Now, there's St. Francis Roman Catholic Church down the street who are worshiping right now as we are. Great people down there. I've enjoyed getting to know members of that congregation. But even them, Catholic Big C, they are a part of the communion worldwide Catholic Church with a little c, right alongside us United Methodists, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, and the whole rest of the family. So you can embrace that word. It's a good word. It means we can be everywhere having an influence across the world. Many of you know what that's about, because you come back when you've been on vacation, and maybe you bring Pastor Dale and I the bulletin from a church you went to visit somewhere all the way across the country somewhere. And often the story you tell is how, you know, I went in there not knowing anybody, but I sat down and, you know, it felt kind of oddly familiar, and people were very kind. You could tell there was love in the place. And I felt God there. And I love it when that happens. We need those reminders to remember the movement of God's love in the world, which we call the church, is in all places. The book of Acts, we heard read from a moment ago. It's this really amazing adventure story in the Bible. You can read it pretty quickly. It comes right at the end of the four Gospels. It's about how the church takes root. And sometimes it looks like all things are going famously. And some things, it looks kind of rocky. When you read the book of Acts, sometimes it's bizarre, these things that go on. But the church seems a little shaky at first. Until you can read parts of the book of Acts, you wonder if the church is going to make it. But like anything new, a marriage, a business, a church, there's going to be ups and downs along the way. I appreciate the biblical stories that tell us the very human parts, where not everything went along as it was planned, because that shows that it's really human. Two places in the Bible that I want to point out. One is where Alan read that things were going on very well. There was awe. People were amazed at the teachings in the church. They came together and they shared all their possessions, who had need, were very generous. And I love that phrase, they broke bread in their homes together with glad and generous hearts. All is well with the world. But you go a little further, there's the instance Alan read about where people were accused of taking money from the till or withholding money, and another place where there's a lot of arguing going on. Acts chapter 15 has all the leaders of the church huddling together because they're trying to crack the hard nut of how are we going to allow people to join our church who don't look like us. In fact, they're from way afar places. They haven't grown up with the same things that we've grown up with. It was the hard and important work of learning how to be inclusive as the church. That's what's going on in Acts chapter 15. And if you read that chapter, you find out all those leaders huddle together, and there's a lot of debating and arguing, and things get loud. They have to get away and cool off from each other for a while. They come back together. There's more arguing. But finally, they find a way forward. And the way forward is to open the way for people of all nations and races to be a part of Christ's church. Jew, Gentile, free, slave, everything in between gets to follow Christ in this new, emerging, enlarging church. And it only happened after this moment of disharmony and this great argument. So here are two places in the Bible, right next to each other, that show the church sometimes in harmony, sometimes in conflict, but always being a tool of God's, where God is showing how much God is in love with the human family and doing it through the church. Do you notice the church is often referred to as a her? We sang a great hymn this morning, The Church is One Foundation. It was all about she and her. In the last book of the Bible, Revelation, there's this metaphor John the writer has of the church is like a bride to Christ, loving the world. Maybe that's where we get it, that church is a her. But I think maybe there's other reasons, because I think the church has a mothering love for all of her children. Don't you sense it? I sense it here in this place. It's like the church is a great mother. I see it, folks hugging, folks stepping up to start a conversation with a stranger after church, folks coming up to somebody and saying, would you like to join our group? Sometimes folks putting money on a pile of other money. This beautiful little moment, a little girl came and gave money for missions this morning during the children's time. And I think it's this mothering, this generative giving that I think we often see in the church. It happened just last Wednesday night. For some of us who were here, we had the cabin fever night, where people came together and we had all sorts of chilies people brought in for a cook-off and voting on the best chili, and there was crafts at tables and a variety show. I didn't have to have a lot of responsibility that night, so I just enjoyed walking around and watching. And at one point, I saw guests from our outreach ministry sitting at a table with our children and their parents, and they were making slime together. Oh, you missed it if you didn't come. And then there was a high school boy who was performing a courageous dance on the stage, and everyone just applauded and gave him all the heart because he was putting so much of his energy into it. And then I walked back toward the kitchen in the dish room where guys had, thank you guys, had shown up for the unglamorous but important work of washing dishes and scraping off plates at the end of all the meals that we do here. And it was guys who didn't know each other. But in the course of a little time, they found they had things in common. And as they were scraping off plates and stacking dishes, they were laughing together. They found they had things in common. And I think at moments like that, the church is really changing the world through 1,000 small moments, all based on relationships where people are humanizing each other. And God is in the middle of that. I love it that in my job I get to see that happen a lot. But have we got problems in the church? Yeah, we do. Because all the leaders in the church are flawed, imperfect people, always have been, current company notwithstanding. And there's always an argument brewing somewhere in the church. But I still think the church is God's answer to our existential need for belonging and community and validation and truth-telling. Of course, the point is not to just come to the church and get. You know, I occasionally hear people say, you know, I want to come to a church where I'm really fed. And I want to say, okay, that's great. What will you do to make the church a life-changing vehicle of God's in the world yourself? How will you help? If you're a follower of Jesus, it's not just that you need the church, but the church needs you. The church needs you to show up. It needs you to cross the abyss and start a conversation with someone who's not included yet. Sometimes all the church needs from you is to stand at the door and welcome people and give them that first impression that this is a safe place for them. Occasionally I hear people say, you know, I don't really need the church, thank you very much. And I want to say, really? You don't need a place, a validation of people who are trying to seek a spiritual path with you, even though it might be a little different than you? You don't need a place where we get to turn to great rituals and rites like breaking bread together and singing the great songs of the church? You don't need an intergenerational place where people are trying to stand up for values together? Of course, I don't say that. I just say, okay, tell me more. You know, the church is still forming, even 20 centuries later. This morning in the well service, we received three young women who wanted to join the church. And like we always do in our services, there's something all the people say back to the newcomers. It's that wonderful line of affirmation. We welcome you, and we renew our vows to give ourselves to the church, God's vehicle in the world. We get to re-up. Every week we come here, we think again, what is it about? I, with other people, am trying to be the best me that I can only be in God's presence. I've been reading a lot this past year about those who don't ever come to church and those who do see themselves as spiritual but not religious. I got to say that I see some of them with the ethical serving that they have in their lives as being more faithful people than a lot of churchgoers I know. But I still believe that we all need a redemptive community. which is what the church is at its best. Not just a private spiritual path. I think that's what the church offers, something corporate. I began my talk this morning remembering being in the eighth grade at my home church in Tennessee where I grew up. So I want to end with thinking of them one more time. Because it wasn't just the eighth grade for me. I'm remembering how that same group of people stood by my family when my parents' marriage broke up a couple of years later. I'm remembering one youth group leader who would check on my brother and I regularly to see just that we were okay. I'm remembering that same home church of mine when I was in high school, making it clear to me that if I was going to be a Christ follower, I had to be in mission to other people. So our youth group, every month, we spent time going to a home where adult men with Down syndrome live to play cards and sing and hang out with them for an afternoon on Sundays. Think about my same home church, that bunch of people. When I started sensing maybe there was a call in me toward ordained ministry, said, take a big challenge, Chris. Go way out. Live your dreams. Go to Boston and study. There's good things happening up there. I remember years later, my same home church cared for my parents as they were in later years and some forms of dementia happening and gave especially my dad a great send-off at the end of his life. You have those stories too where you could look at this church and say it's happening. But that's my story woven in and out of my years. So I say with great conviction, I believe in the Holy Catholic Church with all its beautiful iterations and versions that touch people around the world. Amen.